Secretary of State Anthony Blinken is heading to Europe for what is described as urgent talks on Ukraine. Let's check in with Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. And Joe, what are you hearing about the Secretary of State's visit?
Well, Bob, good afternoon from Kyiv. Not a lot on this because I think, you know, there's, from those who are close to Ukraine, at this point, there's really not a lot of expectations or hope that the Biden administration is going to change the policies they've had for the past years and past months. You know, there was some hope, I think, right before the election that, you know, that President Biden would want to, you know, sort of preserve his legacy and make some powerful moves here. But we don't see that at all. You know, I think Secretary Blinken himself is someone who clearly personally cares about Ukraine. You know, he's shown his devotion by making trips to the country, by getting to know Ukrainians, even by playing, famously playing the guitar at an underground concert here. I think he has an affinity for it. And so I think this might be kind of a swan song tour for him. You know, we have to remember his father was in the room when they signed the Budapest Memorandum in 1994. The very document that which the U.S. and Russia pushed Ukraine to give up its nuclear weapons made Ukraine quite unprotected. And so I think there's a big sense of a personal mission to help Ukraine from Anthony Blinken. But there's no there's no indications of any intention on changing policy here at all. And that's why, you know, so much of the chatter is looking toward, you know, who is Donald Trump choosing to put around him in his inner circle. And of course, we have to, you know, realize that no matter who Trump is nominating now, still has to be approved by the Senate. So even, for example, you know, as we talked about yesterday, Trump's selection of Mike Waltz, congressman from Florida, seems pretty strong for Ukraine. But there are senators, Republican senators, who don't like him for that reason. So there could be some opposition to that. So Trump has it seems he's made some strong picks in favor of Ukraine in these past hours. One kind of wild card is his choice to, for Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, who is an American veteran. But I mean, in the past 10 years or so, he's been a Fox News personality and a bit of a wild card. He has said some strong things about Ukraine, but it's hard to have a clear indication. But I think if you look at who Trump has chosen for his national security advisor versus Secretary of Defense, you know, they're two very different roles. The national security advisor, you know, formerly it does not have, you know, that much power. They're not in charge of a department. They're not properly a cabinet secretary, but you have the ear of the president and you're there shaping policy. And for example, so, you know, Joe Biden's national security advisor since his time as vice president under Obama has been Jake Sullivan. And many people, you know, say that the strategy of Joe Biden in Ukraine and in other places around the world has been the strategy of Jake Sullivan. So that national security advisory position is very crucial. And that does give Ukrainians a lot of hope that they pick someone who's actually been very thoughtful about Ukraine and who's been very critical of Biden, not for supporting Ukraine, but for not supporting Ukraine enough. That's been pretty often the clear position of Congressman Waltz from Florida. So there's a bit of hope there. But then, you know, even amid all of this, we had, you know, a couple of days ago, we had that false start, you know, 24 bombers took off and then nothing happened. And then, well, today something happened at about 6 o'clock this morning. People woke up throughout Ukraine to the air raid alarms going off. You know, either you hear it on the street or you hear it on the app on your phone. And about a half dozen bombers had taken off. So nowhere near as big as what happened on Sunday morning or Monday morning, but about half dozen bombers took off, and within an hour and a half, there were ballistic missiles being launched throughout Ukraine, including here in Kyiv. We had a combination of drones, the Iranian suicide drones, and ballistic missiles hitting the city, and it was a foggy morning, and so the drones are hard to spot. And it seems that the Russians, among their, you know, in their toolbox of drones, they have some newer ones that also hit Kharkiv this morning. I was just talking to people there in Kharkiv. These drones are smaller, and so they're less, they cause less damage, but because they're cheaper to produce, the Russians can send more of them, and they're harder to spot and to hear and to shoot down. especially on a foggy morning like today. They don't have that lawnmower sound like the Iranian drones. And so, for example, there was a few minutes today. It was about a sustained 2.5 minute period of machine gun fire here in Kyiv, here in the center of the city. You can't really see what's going on because of all the clouds and the fog. But that usually you hear maybe 20 or so seconds of machine gun fire, and they're able to get their target to hit the drone. But I mean, this was about more than two minutes of sustained machine gun fire as they're frantically trying to stop these drones from hitting the city. And both in Kyiv and in Kharkiv, because of this onslaught, there was damage, and they're still figuring it out. If there were fatalities, but certainly there has been damage.
That's got to be so frightening. I can't imagine being there. As you mentioned, Joseph, everybody's speculating on how Donald Trump will handle the war in Ukraine. And I'd like to get your opinion on an editorial that was written by Daniel DePetris. He is a fellow at Defense Priorities and a foreign affairs columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And he wrote, forget about what Trump may or may not do and focus instead on how the war in Ukraine is actually playing out. Ultimately, what is and isn't possible at the negotiating table will be determined by where the front lines are at any given time, which side is on the upswing, and who has more resources at their disposal to sustain the fight. Whatever Donald Trump decides to do will need to be based on reality, not fairy tale cheerleading from pundits who equate an imperfect peace with outright surrender. What's your feeling on that?
Well, in my initial gut feeling on it, and having not seen that before, is that is pushing the narrative that I think that the Russians are hoping to push, that they can really pound Ukraine these next months with really zero, actual leadership, accountable leadership in Washington right now. I mean, it's not clear who's really running the show in the White House, and so that the Russians can weaken Ukraine and pound it. And this is a great fear here in Kyiv, so that it would, that Trump would be in a, more difficult position, and Zelensky would be in a more difficult position to negotiate. So to really weaken Ukraine these next months. And part of that weakening is to prepare the argument that there needs to be these sort of negotiations, that there's some kind of equity between Russia and the West and Russia and Ukraine. And so I think the Russians are laying this groundwork. And, it was very interesting that you had a couple of days ago last week when Trump won the election, the Kremlin, Russian TV, when they reported on this, they also had on like a split screen images of Melania Trump from years ago, from her modeling days, and nude images. And they and people are saying, well, why would they do this? Don't they like, doesn't, people, some people think the Kremlin likes Trump. And then the people who oppose Trump in America start sharing this and saying, oh, look, the Kremlin doesn't even respect you. And that's the trick of Russian propaganda. It's this reflexive control theory that goes back to the days of the KGB, of getting people. So the Americans who don't support Trump, many of them did support Ukraine. But all of a sudden, they're sharing information that the Kremlin is giving them. And they don't realize it, but they're actually building an informational relationship with the Kremlin. Yeah. That they thought they hated. And so the Kremlin is very good at getting into this in our minds. And I think that's why I never like to quote or cite anything they say, because we don't really know what they're trying to, how they're trying to manipulate us.
Sure. You have such great insights. Always appreciate it. Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Bob. Until tomorrow.